America.
Start listening now.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
I had some great news.
What is it?
We patched things up with the Tunnix Tea Cake people, and we have sponsorship now.
Oh, sweet.
We got that Tea Cakes cash?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
How'd that happen?
We're going to get like regularly paid per episode now?
For like a crap ton of tea cakes?
You know what? This is what happens when the media... Oh, hey, everyone. I didn't see you there. We're 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, coming to a country near you. I have calmed down now, and I'm Eric.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Danny. This week we are talking about
America.
A country. I was going to say the greatest country in the world in a joking tone, but I think all we can call it now is an country.
And
America.
One country.
That's trying to, you know, you Europeans came over here and made America, and now we are all about going back over there and meddling. So, in case the audience out there is not perfectly aware of this news, Netflix in America has just finally brought in Eurovision 2019 to
Woo!
Streaming. We can watch all of the semifinals and the finals unedited. Now, because America does not have an actual broadcaster for this, I love this. So I watched both semifinals today. You know, I've seen it already, and I'm probably not going to watch the final again. But what's wild about the semifinals is they have the postcard things, you know, where they, like, you know, go to the Dead Sea, or, like, they go to the Tel Aviv Pier.
They do their little dancey dance.
Yeah, and there's just some, like, you know, mild music playing over it. But usually, the national broadcaster will say something about the band or the act coming up next. Instead, on the American Netflix, we are treated to just a solid 20 or 30 seconds of just wordless dancing and gallivanting.
Wordless dancing. Doo-doo-doo.
Absolutely love it.
It's Eurovision in its purest, unadulterated
form. No narration. Just stare at this. Yes, it's good.
No distraction. No risk of somebody, you know, some broadcaster talking over the beginning of the song, which is the biggest pet peeve of them all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm thrilled to see Netflix pick up Eurovision, especially considering that there was no network showing it in the U.S. this year. Logo dropped their coverage for the first time since 2016, I think it was.
Long streak.
No, yeah. But a trend, at least.
There was an attempt.
Yeah.
They
and
tried.
As many of our American listeners know, Eurovision has been geo-blocked on YouTube since 2016. So we had nothing.
We just get the songs themselves.
Yeah.
But we don't get any of the performances.
Right, exactly. This is a major, major boost, a major boon. And
I will say Netflix isn't particularly pushing it.
No.
It's not like how you usually do when you, like, open up Netflix in the States, and there's, like, they have, like, a splash screen that's whatever they're promoting right now.
Right.
And they have, like, top picks or, like, top trending.
Stranger Things or the new series of Queer Eye.
Eurovision, you gotta know it's there for this one.
You have to believe that it's there.
Clap harder.
You have to clap and believe Eurovision works.
Yeah.
But it's there, and I think this is the first step to really gauging whether...
Yeah.
For lack of a better phrase, if America is ready for Eurovision.
Will we?
Because we know Eurovision will never be ready for America. I don't know Eurovision's ready for a lot of stuff.
No.
But
they were barely ready for Iceland this year.
This year. I think that's going to be our first big question on what if the America happen is what, like how is the U.S. going to be introduced to Eurovision as, you know, on a big scale like this? And will we care? Will the U.S. care?
I think it kind of starts, I guess, in the way that it has been for many years. I mean, with the last couple of years notwithstanding, because not everybody had access to Logo. Granted, not everybody has access to Netflix, but chances are you know somebody who has a Netflix account.
I would say more people have Netflix than had premium cable access to Logo.
Absolutely. Or, you know, somebody's access to somebody's Netflix faster that they can...
Yeah.
You know,
by a significant margin, I think Netflix has Logo beat.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, like the viewing figures for Logo when they were showing Eurovision was... It was pitiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was barely in the six digits, if that... It was non-existent, basically. So this being exposed to a wider audience at all on demand is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of this is going to be word of mouth, like it always has been.
Yeah.
If this isn't going to be a massive thing, you know, it's going to spread the way that I that I spread this,
this disease, this curse, watching the Ring video.
Pass it on.
The only way to cure the curse is to pass it on to more people.
It worked now, for us.
And now it's working for you at home, the listeners. Right. Pass it on.
7 days.
I think it's going to pass through word of mouth, friend to friend to friend. She's never home because she plays in a band.
She said it there.
She said the thing in the song. Mm-hmm.
The format that they have, like I've said, it's kind of uncut, unadulterated. Just, it is the semifinal. It is the final. There's no framing. There's no announcement to explain to American viewers or anything what is actually going on here. It's everything. It's all the presenters. It's all of the interviews. It's all the interval acts. It's all of that.
For better or
really,
for worse, yeah.
Well, personally, I really appreciate that. I like that America is getting Eurovision as it is.
As it really
that
is.
That it is not being Americanized. I'll get into this a little bit when we talk about would America care if we were competing or whatever. But I really like that it is there exactly the way that Europe gets it. That it's being presented in a way that is unfiltered and is authentic.
Right.
Because there isn't anything like Eurovision here, and I think it has at least the potential to stand out being presented that way. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly a unique program. There's very little like it around the world. There are other musical festivals, but not one with the history and with the depth and the breadth of nations that take part in this sort of clash of cultures. Another thing I really like about the fact that there's no commentator is that a commentator has the power to influence how an audience views the contest.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. They're viewing it half as the content of the contest and half of the presentation of the presenter.
Exactly. For a very long time, Terry Wogan, who was the presenter
for the UK,
started out very loving towards the contest when he first started, but by the end of it, he became, you know, like so many of us, crotchety, for lack of a better term. It became almost, hate to say it, almost borderline xenophobic. And it turned less, here's this contest that we know, that we love, we're gathering around the TV, we're watching Europe come together, and it's more, look at what all the silly foreigners are doing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it began to really, you see a lot of that in the sort of casual viewer of Eurovision in the UK, and to a lesser extent in Australia, that before Australia started sending their own commentators, they would often take the British commentators.
Makes sense.
So a lot of Eurovision fans or Eurovision viewers in Australia will say, oh, that's so Eurovision. And when they're saying that, it's very much a Wogan-esque kind of spin on Eurovision.
Wogan-esque. Yeah.
I mean, what other word is there?
Yeah, I know.
So
Wogantic.
Yeah, it's Wogantic. Terrifying. There we go.
Ooh, you did it.
Yeah,
there we go. We got it.
I did the thing.
Add that to the lexicon we don't have. But will, eventually.
Yeah.
Hope.
I can definitely see that happening. I don't know who would even like be the presenter or the commentator for the American broadcast.
We've had American presenters or commentators on when it was on Logo.
And who was it?
We had Carson Kresley.
And
Michelle Collins. And that, because neither of them really knew what Eurovision was about.
True. Yeah.
By default, all they had to go on was look at all the silly stuff.
The camp.
On.
Yeah,
at the camp.
It almost felt a little bit like Logo went through the Rolodex, called up Carson, was like, hey, you're gay. You want to do this?
Yeah.
This
thing? The gays love this, so yeah. We figured a gay would do it.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly,
it's on Logo. You may as well, you know.
Yeah.
That's also.
What are they
going to
get? Adam Lambert? No, he's touring.
He would be.
He would have been great.
Great choice.
You cracked the code. I'm going to place a call. Hang on.
Hello, Mr. Adam Lambert.
I think the following years they had Ross Matthews, who was a little bit more.
He's from Jay Leno.
Okay. So he's a bit more happy-go-lucky and very kind of positive, but still sort of muddled and mystified about what the heck is going on. And he was paired with, I think, Michelle Visage.
Oh, wow.
And then I think there was a year where it was Ross and Shangela.
They are just, wow. Logo knew how to do in-house stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty on the nose.
How long has Graham Norton been doing it for the UK? And is he still doing it?
He's still doing it, okay. Yeah. I think he started the year after Wogan retired. So I want to say started in 2009?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 2000, yeah. I think Wogan stepped down after Russia's win. So that would have been between 2008 and 2009.
He resigned in disgrace after Russia won.
I mean, like I said, he was getting old and crotchety. It was time for the new guard. With Graham, you could tell he loves it, but he's still, there's still a little bit of that sort of, oh, look at what they're doing over there.
Because that's kind of the attitude, we've talked about this before, is that the UK kind of has that attitude toward Eurovision, that it is, like, especially with sending acts, that there's kind of like a, it's for has-beens, it's kind of not real art, it's kind of, it's like this problematic view that they have of Eurovision that just governs everything.
Right.
Well, we won't have that in the US. What I like best about it coming to the Netflix thing is, Netflix has this way of just, they don't like focus test anything. They just bring these shows into your home without even like any advertisement or anything. And just because they're there, people consume them and watch them. I feel like Stranger Things came out and no one knew that Stranger Things was happening. It just all of a sudden was there. Everyone decided to watch it.
It's very much an act of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say if Eurovision will stick. It kind of pains me to say this, but something that I feel would get people to tune in to Eurovision on Netflix in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
is memes.
Memes?
For real. Some sort of influencer checks this thing out, sees Hatari or the orb in Duncan Lawrence's performance. Just something. Makes a meme out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Meme's a hit. All of a sudden people are like, okay, what is this? I really feel like, mentioned this before, there's nothing quite like Eurovision, especially not in the US.
Yeah.
I would like to think if you get people to watch, they'll enjoy it. And I'm not sure of that for a few different reasons. Should I start ranting now?
Go on.
Okay.
Go on. Because I'll probably have something to assuage it in a few minutes.
All right.
I'm just going to sit here eating my Tunnix tea.
Yeah. Tunnix tea cakes. We love you.
The taste of new generation.
Yeah. Little, yellow. Different.
Anyway, go on.
Here's the counter argument to that, and the thing that I think may be more true than the other thing I just said about meme. Like, yes, that could work. That is a thing I see potentially happening, because the meme potential of Eurovision is huge. But here's the thing. The American audience has a taste for singing competitions.
Mm-hmm.
We have ones that do very, very well.
Uh-huh.
We have American Idol. We have The Voice. The Masked Singer this past spring was huge.
It's so much fun.
I think of those, Eurovision maybe is most comparable to The Masked Singer because they are both about the performance more than the other stuff. People tune into The Voice and American Idol. And
for the hosts, more than anything.
For the hosts, but also because they're not singing contests. They're human interest stories.
Oh, sure.
Wrapped in a vocal competition.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what Eurovision is. And I'm glad that's not what Eurovision is. Eurovision is, as its name suggests, a song contest. We don't really have that here. I know NBC was plugging some songwriter thing. I haven't heard anything since then, so I don't know if that tanked or what.
What was that thing called? Yeah, it was like on, I was watching those commercials for, it was literally just called like The Next Great American Song, because the creators of TV show names are
less than original.
Paid very well.
Yes. The thing that concerns me about getting Eurovision to take off in the US, if that is to be the goal of whoever, is do you compromise the soul of Eurovision, which is that it's a song contest and that it's performances, and that's it, by adding these human interest elements or whatever between the songs. Replace the postcards with about how all their aunts died in train wrecks or whatever. And
number one cause of aunt death.
Or can this be done in a way where it is what we know to be great and is still compelling?
But I think that you can make Eurovision a human interest story contest as well if you approach it in a certain way. Eurovision, unlike Idol or The Voice or most of the shows that we have here in the US, Eurovision has the buildup that we know all the songs in advance. We know who's coming to the table. You can go into it blind and it's still super enjoyable without all the background information. But if you want to, you can research the songs and the singers beforehand and you could know, oh, the singer from Portugal has a heart condition. The singer from Greece was born in Montreal. Mm-hmm. You can know, you know, the singers from Iceland are going to burn everything down. They almost did. You can approach it. If you want the human interest story, it's there for you. Or you could just go in and just focus mm-hmm. purely on the music. There's something for everybody.
Of the tens of millions of viewers in Europe, what percentage do you think do one or the other of those things? The people who intently tune in to watch Eurovision every year, do the majority of them kind of do their research beforehand? Or is there a significant percentage who don't do that and then make up their mind on who to vote for and so on the spot because this is the first time hearing the songs?
I have no idea.
Probably that a mix of those purists. Yeah. I mean, I was a purist like that for a long time.
Yeah.
Which I wanted to wait until, like,
yeah,
to see them for the first time to know what to play.
You see, I've never had that willpower. I mean, partially because I love the national final season so much. I kind of dive headfirst into that. And now that I'm sort of behind the scenes, I don't have the luxury of being able to go blind. I have to be able to go and absorb as much as I can.
We've got a podcast now.
Woo! I think it would be a really interesting poll or study to see what the percentage is, what the split is of who's there as a super fan and knows everything about everything, who's in there and maybe just runs down the Wikipedia page or goes onto the Eurovision website beforehand and goes, oh, this person looks cute. I want to see what their song is like.
Mm-hmm.
And who's there and just, it's like, oh, Armenia's in it this year? Okay. You know, that'd be a really interesting split. And it'd also be interesting to see how that is split up by country. You know, where are the hyper fans?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that some countries may be more rabid about the contest than others. Spanish Euro fans, the ones that I've met, have been absolutely nuts. Super passionate about it.
Shout out to Spain, friend of the show.
Oh, yeah.
The entire country of Spain.
The entire nation of Spain.
Reino de España.
Sí. Amigos del podcast. And, I think it'd be really a fascinating kind of split.
I'm suddenly picturing, I guess the other thing about these American singing shows is they go on for 15 weeks or something like that, and they just sort of slowly narrow it down, which is kind of the opposite of how Eurovision does it.
Yeah.
I'm suddenly all imagining, like, America's Got Talent, if they just cut to the top, you know, 20.
They just pointed at people and went, you're out, you're out, you're out. And all of a sudden, we just got 20.
Yeah, and there are 20 people left, and then there was one 4-hour episode to determine which of the 20 would win.
So
that's basically what Eurovision is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it could work.
This will be my final thoughts on why I think America would care. And I really think that America would care if Netflix or whoever is going to do a live stream of it would just push it. First off, I think the U.S., more so even than in recent years, has been kind of primed for international TV, especially with Netflix and all these streaming services. I think we've gotten a lot more BBC content than even was available to Americans 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, like, Irish TV or even, like, shows from Germany that are starting to, like, cross over. Dark is big on Netflix right now because Stranger Things is over and people like weird stuff on their TV. But, like, we're primed for, like, the idea of America only consuming American goods is, I think, really not true when it comes to media. And secondly, Americans really like rooting for teams. And if there's one thing that I think baffles a lot of people in Europe, it's that Americans kind of almost obsess over their heritage. And so I think there would be there's a big possibility of a big American viewership having, you know, people who have heritage in Scandinavia or people having heritage in Italy or Spain or the UK or anywhere else, Eastern Europe, going big time and, like, rooting for those people as their home team.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you watch these reality shows, you have to, like, find out about these people's terrible, tragic backstories or, like, their dreams. And it's like, no, let's just cut to the chase. I want Norway to win. Eric.
But It
is the reason why I believe in the Czech Republic so much, is because that's like where my family comes from.
Oh, we all knew that you were a Bohemian,
yes.
Danny.
Now, we have a regular attendee of the Eurovision party most years. She wasn't there this year, but a friend of ours who is very Polish.
So super Polish.
Severely Polish.
Hi, Alaska, we love you.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, for sure.
Amiga of the show.
who will enthusiastically, regardless of how awful the song
regardless of the quality of the song, just
10 points for
Poland.
Poland. Period. That was where my mind went when you said that.
I think something uncanny about her, though, she has some sort of a Poland radar that even before, like, for a while, I actually instated a rule during my Eurovision parties where I won't say the name of the country until after the song and after everybody has submitted their vote. And yet she still somehow knows what song Poland was.
Oh, he's Polska. She just points at me. Folds her arms and sits back. Poland.
My Poldar doesn't work at all.
Well, you're not going to the right bars.
That's probably true.
No, I mean, it's really fascinating to see in such a diverse culture as America is, we still have those ties.
People are just like, yeah, no, I come from Eastern Europe, or like I'm part Native American, or like we're like totally Scots-Irish. Like that's a huge thing in like enclaves in America. It's something that either like Europeans are like, oh, of course they do, or Europeans are just completely baffled by it, because I mean, when you live in France, you're from France. Like, there's no reason to, like, even, like, second guess it. But, like, you know, it's a huge thing that we all talk about here because
it's
the nature of this country.
Right, right. I can imagine, like, cultural centers across the country streaming the event. Like, we here in the Twin Cities.
Can you imagine a Boston bar cheering
for
Sarah McTiernan last year?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh. Now I'm just imagining a whole bunch of, like,
it's their turn to have their sports teams let them down.
Actually, I just want to see a whole big bar full of drunken Bostonian Irish, you know, Eurovision new fans being completely befuddled by whatever Jedward is. Yeah, Ireland! What the...
Yes.
It's really fascinating. And even we as Americans also embrace cultures that aren't necessarily ours. Like, everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Everybody's, you know, you probably saw this a lot more on the East Coast where I grew up, but everybody was Italian on Columbus Day, which is, you know, problematic in its own way. But
ew.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For a bit of context, for those of you listening from outside the Twin Cities area, we don't actually celebrate Columbus Day here. It's Indigenous Peoples Day here. Bit of context. Yay, Minnesota.
We're all giving a thumbs up to the microphone because it's good.
Because the microphone also supports Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yay.
Thanks, microphone.
Thanks, microphone.
Now, to segue, since I think that I think America has the potential to care.
Yes.
So long as it, like, any good piece of the product is marketed well. Big question.
Mm.
The American delegation, who do they send?
I have pondered this.
Because we have, bigger than any European country, a bigger well to draw from.
True. Very, very true.
I feel like a lot of things... Just to get this out of the way really quick, we're jumping several steps ahead. I think a lot of things would need to happen before they would ever consider allowing the United States into Eurovision.
Oh, yeah.
I would say fantasy land.
Suppose this happened, this, I think, very unlikely thing to ever happen, comes to be, the United States is in Eurovision.
We have a big thing to select from. We don't have any of the Eurovision stigma. We're new to the thing. We've just seen 1 year, 2019. Who do we send?
All right. So, I mean, what do you want from your Eurovision artist? You want them to have a personality that is...
I want it to fit into the Eurovision brand.
Right.
You know?
So you want something eye-catching, but not necessarily completely distracting. You want something engaging, something with a good hook. You want something that shows local flavor and culture. And so my brain, whenever I think of who I would send as the head of the quote-unquote American
Steely
delegation...
Steely Dan. I'm so glad someone finally said it, sending Steely Dan to Amsterdam.
Oh, man.
Go ahead.
Took the words out of my mouth. My brain goes to Fits in the Tantrums.
Yes.
Big poppy songs with a really big influence of Motown, that sort of classic American R&B bluesy rock kind of sound, two dynamic lead singers, Fitz and Noel are both amazing.
Fitz and his tantrum.
And or the tantrums. Really engaging. They've come out with some really great poppy, summery hits. I would give my vote to them.
I think it depends on who's making the decision.
Mm. Is it an internal selection?
I think there's
no doubt
that we would have a national final. I think we would have a big nationwide contest.
Like, it would have, like, it would be almost an American Idol-esque thing, and that's how we would determine, because that's how a few countries do it. I think that's how Israel does it,
I would imagine it, like, if America is just dipping its toe in, they'd probably go the Australian route and have...
Just make selections the first year?
Just to get their feet wet.
Okay.
And then expand it, like, get the enthusiasm going, and then hit it with the national final.
like, hey, you get to have a choice in the matter now, that sort of thing.
Yeah, take the training wheels off. Yeah.
The big four networks on American TV, whoever would have, like, made the broadcast or streaming rights, all of them would have the money to pay for big acts. Big acts to go. Like, I mean, think of NBC with all of their coffers at their disposal. They could select anyone to say, hey, you want to take a song to this new crazy thing that's happening in Europe? Which is how all Americans talk. All executives are like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The big new thing. Out in Amsterdam. Maybe you want to get out there, Beyonce. And it would never be Beyonce.
And ladies and gentlemen, that was Danny's random accent of the week.
John Mulaney as an NBC executive.
So if it's an internal selection and it's people who understand Eurovision, I think they go one of a couple ways. They either go with a fairly straightforward pop act. I know Carly Rae Jepsen is Canadian.
We can't have her. So, we want her, but we can't
so
have
we
her.
Can.
If she was duetting with an American artist, however.
Somebody like Garth Brooks or
Steely Dan.
somebody like that. I'm trying to think of other like young up and coming pop artists that are a little more straightforward. So like
BTS.
But I keep thinking of things that are American.
That's actually my problem. Is I was thinking, I was like, okay, so what are the bands that I like that I would like love to send to Eurovision? I was like, Tame Impala. No, that's Australia. Let's send the 1970s. That's okay. Like we have so many, acts that are popular in America that are not from America.
Like Sigrid came to mind for me. Good young pop star. She's from Norway.
Yes.
Sigrid, do Eurovision. Be a friend of the show, please, and of me personally. I don't know. I think you do something like that, or you go with perhaps a like an R&B hip hop type act, because I feel like that is something that is part of American culture that doesn't show up in Eurovision a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
One name that comes to mind for me is Lizzo.
Yeah.
I feel like
not a friend of the show. Please be a friend of the show.
Please, you're a local girl. We love you.
From Minneapolis. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. At the very least, she would represent Minnesota in a domestic contest.
I feel like the people who would really care about Eurovision from the get-go would be super
into Lizzo.
Super into Lizzo.
Oh, yeah.
My concern, I think, is once it goes to a national final, perhaps that audience changes and the voting populace changes, and then all of a sudden we start sending Carrie Underwood.
Oh.
Which she would be okay. Yeah. I think if she...
It sure does represent the country. Like, you know, country music is a popular genre here. It really is.
She's got the voice. She's got, you know, she's got the reality TV experience.
Credit, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be completely averse to having Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
There are other acts I'd like more, but I'm just not a huge country fan.
I'm just thinking of general, like, American Idol winners, especially early on, and they all seem like they would be decent Eurovision choices.
Oh, Kelly.
Like Kelly or Fantasia.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What Soul Patrol guy? Maybe not him.
Not Taylor Hicks?
Not Taylor Hicks.
Oh.
And Kelly Clarkson is still, like, a legitimate singer and artist.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was so strange that she, like, went... I think she was the only one who purely went from... I am a contestant on the talent show to like being a like big pop star.
Oh, Carrie Underwood.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah. I forget that she was on American Idol.
I know.
I forgot that it was like season 5 even.
Something like that. Yeah, she was pretty early on.
Another name that suddenly
like
comes
Philip
to
Phillips. Oh boy.
Yeah. Another name that suddenly comes to mind, although now that I think of it, she might be too young, is Grace VanderWaal.
You know what? Let me see how old she is.
So
she
was this girl who plays a ukulele and has a surprisingly good voice.
Oh,
she won America's Got Talent a few years ago.
That's her.
All right. Scoping out Grace VanderWaal's Wikipedia page, she is currently 15, so she would be 16 in time for Eurovision 2020, which would make her eligible.
Weehoo!
She seems like she would be a good choice as well. Because she too has the TV performance thing down and is very difficult to not like, which also seems handy. It was good for like Loic or Blanche or some of the other like younger performers that Eurovision has had. I realize that doesn't always work out. We saw Belarus this year.
Uh-huh.
Also 16 and... But yeah, that's another one that comes to mind. Maybe that's the way to find a performer. But if we're going to use a established American act, sort of the way Australia did for the first few years, I like Fits in the Tantrums. I like Lizzo. Let's get gosh, I don't know.
Who else are the kids listening to nowadays? I've been so immersed in Eurovision music over the last couple of years. I feel like I'm losing touch with what's actually popular in my...
What's actually on the radar. Well, Maroon 5 is still, you know, being Frankenstein's monster reanimated every single year, it seems, to make the same old pop music. So we might just send them. I have, like, a dream act to send to Eurovision. And then, like, who is much more likely? I think, like, the band that would be likely and might actually do well at Eurovision is, for me, Florence and the Machine. I think when you send Florence and the Machine, it would actually be pretty great.
Aren't they British?
What?
Wait.
Conway can't.
No.
She's British. This is happening
Welsh,
again.
She's
Welsh?
Her last name is Welsh. Band is from London. Florence Welch is from London.
Okay,
sorry,
well,
buddy.
This is a real shame then.
Sorry.
All right, then
we're going to have to just stick with Steely Dan.
I'm going to send Steely Dan. The other band that I was thinking about, they make good modern pop music that's already like 3 minutes long and perfect for Eurovision. It's a band that not a lot of people outside of the Twin Cities have heard of. They're called Hippocampus. I think they would be fantastic at Eurovision in the same realm as like Malawi, in just a young indie pop band that would make a song that would sound great even if it didn't go to Eurovision. But they're still very artsy and eccentric, so they would definitely have their niche at Eurovision.
Okay, now that you're like spreading the evangelism of Hippocampus to a new audience, if you were to recommend a song or two from Hippocampus, what would be like your favorite song?
Honestly, I could see them performing Bambi, which is a hit from like just this last album that they sent out. That would be great. Take a listen. I think it would stick out at Eurovision as a great song that actually stands on its own two legs. And their songs are like the perfect length. These are no sprawling 6-minute pop operas. So I think it would do well. And they would do well. Send those boys to Europe. Unsupervised. American boys in Europe. What could happen? Great. Perfect. Send them to Amsterdam. Bingo. What's next topic?
I kind of want to hear you riffing about the movie that like is going to inevitably come out of Hippocampus.
Oh, it's basically, have you seen that movie Euro Trip?
Yeah.
That's basically it, except there's a little less Seth Green. There's still Seth Green.
But just a little less.
Just a little bit
less.
Less. Marginally. Yes. This will bring us to the fact that American artists are no stranger to Eurovision, actually. Or, you know, Eurovision has had its share of American performers on that stage.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I've done a decent amount of research on this. As far as I can tell...
She's got tomes in front of her. She's basically Hermione in chambers.
Okay, yeah. We just brought them up from the library on the 12 Points from America compound, right next to the paddock where we keep Derek.
Which is also...
You get back in there! Get back in there, Derek!
It's also right next to the Eurovision hole.
Yeah, that we kick people into. Like a 300. Let's forget, let's start at the beginning. Who is the first American to darken the doorway of Eurovision?
It's hard to tell in terms of maybe there was, you know, a backing singer that may have been. But as far as I can tell, I think the earliest example of an American singing for another country at Eurovision was at a song in Italy from 1975. It was a duet by an Italian woman named Dori Ghezzi and a man from America named Wes. Just went by Wes.
Just Wes. Was that for legal purposes?
Just Wes.
He was wanted.
His stage name. His real name was Wesley Johnson.
Okay. He was by Wes too.
Yeah.
Former Timberwolf Wes Johnson.
he not only did he sing in Italian, he actually came in third place that year.
Oh.
Song's called Era. Right. Or It Was. A couple years later, so 1979, Jeannie Manson, what was her name? On behalf of Luxembourg, of all things.
Lovely.
Yeah. The song translates from French as I've Already Seen It in Your Eyes. Not a mid-table. Fun fact about Jeannie Manson, former Playboy model.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit interesting.
America sending its finest, as always.
Oh, yeah. Of course. A couple years later, 1981, again, another duet.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Debbie Cameron. Singing a song, again, duet called Cola e la Ai, or Curly Hair or Straight, which is all a song about brotherhood and...
I just got a question. Curly hair or straight?
Well, I choose.
¿Por qué no los dos?
¿Por qué no los dos?
The Luxembourg song, was that a solo act?
That was a solo act.
Okay, so,
yeah, so 1979
was the earliest we had a solo American singing for a country. Okay.
That's as far as I can tell, yes.
From Luxembourger? Was she Luxembourgeois?
No, I think she was from Ohio.
Okay. Exotic, the Luxembourg of America.
Yeah, exotic Ohio. But yeah, Debbie Cameron in 81, coming in 11th place overall, so kind of mid-table.
Mm-hmm.
And a duo with Tommy Seebach, Kola El Ai. It's actually really a fun little bouncy dance number. But we've had Americans coming through year after year since then. We've had, I would say on average, one or two kind of pop up almost mm-hmm. every year since I've been going.
Madonna.
Let's not talk about the interval acts. That's a thing for another show and a rant for another time. You know, a couple years ago, Armenia sent a super group called Genealogy, 6-member group, and they were honoring the Armenian diaspora, and they had singers of Armenian descent, one from each continent. So there was an Armenian-American, there was an Armenian-Japanese woman, Armenian-French, Armenian-Australian.
Armenian-Japanese?
Yes. Yeah. It was, you know, it made it to the final. It was a really interesting song called Don't Deny. Shadow. I should take that back. It was originally called Don't Deny. The Azerbaijanis got
Can they can they go to Eurovision with that song? Oh boy.
They can go with that song, but not with that title.
Not with that title.
So
oh boy.
So they called it Face the Shadow instead.
All right. Oh boy.
Yeah. Musical diplomacy
at
its finest.
Man, they're just coming in with guns a-blazing. Wow.
So
so I've just been handed a note, and it just
from
says,
the city desk.
Yeah, breaking news. It just says Spirit of the Night.
This is the spirit of the night. You know that one?
If only.
Oh, okay.
I wish it had been
a Eurovision song.
If only.
What I don't remember what year this was. It was 1874? Three?
Nice. Germany had just unified.
Well, speaking of unification.
Yes?
That was the Blessed / Unholy Alliance singing for San Marino in 2017. So
this is Serhat's first.
This is the year after Serhat's first,
okay.
Actually.
What is this?
This is the duet again, American in duet
mm-hmm.
with a local. So Valentina Minetta, who is well loved by Eurovision standards. 4-time singer for San Marino, because let's be honest, they don't have that many. And she was paired up with American singer, Detroit-based American singer named Jimmy Wilson.
He sounds like he's from Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Great, I'm on board. Keep going.
Well, yeah. Hang on.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Jimmy, born in America, moved to Germany. He actually played Barack Obama in the musical Hope, Das Obama Musical.
In, like,
in Detroit.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it's a German musical inspired by the life and career of Barack Obama.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that.
And it's funny because he looks just like a young Michael Dorn, the guy who played Worf on TNG. He really does. Like, Google this.
He really does. He really does.
Nice guy.
Was the song?
It was
good. Did it pass muster?
It came in last place in its semifinal.
Oh,
let's play a clip.
No. Aww.
Spirit of the night.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Let's play the clip again.
Spirit of the night.
Hey, you know what we should do?
What?
Let's play it again.
How dare you?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Twice is enough
better.
For two lifetimes.
Well, we have had a better record as Americans at Eurovision
than
Valentina and Jimmy. We actually have had a winner.
You did tell us that we won one time.
We have.
America has won Eurovision already. We don't need to compete. We're done. We're good.
So I like to kind of joke with my British Eurovision fan friends that their most recent win was actually our win. They can't really take credit for 1997, but yeah, Katrina and the Waves, Love Shine a Light, which at the time was like the most decisive winner in Eurovision history. And we're all gonna shine a light together. Katrina of Katrina and the Waves was born in Kansas, girl from Topeka. And the rest of the Waves, I think, are from the UK.
You know, Kansas, where there's waves.
Yeah.
Amber Waves.
They're basically
green.
The Belgium of America. Over the course of the next couple podcasts, we're going to be comparing all of our states to the various countries in Europe.
How will we insult your state? Tune in to find
out. You're going to love it. Delaware better. Watch out.
They know what they did.
They know.
Delaware's the Netherlands, right? Like,
no.
Low and coastal and...
No, they're Croatia.
They're Croatia?
Yes.
Oh. Dare I ask what Jersey is? Do your worst.
San Marino.
Oh.
I was going to say, you know that patch of garbage in the Pacific?
I hate you guys so much. I hate you. Passion.
Broadcasting live to you from the great North Pacific garbage gyre. It's Eurovision 2021. Have fun waking up at 6 a.m., Europe.
Danny,
that's the song I play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a national anthem of the garbage patch.
Yeah. It's just
we're
a
completely
solo
off the
guitar.
Rails. This is
five strings on their six-string Stratocaster.
Yeah. A couple of them are tuned to each other. The
last string is just a bunch of like six-pack rings all together.
Seagull squawking on the background.
Not for long.
No. I've just made myself sad.
Where were we? Oh, Katrina, yes. There we go.
In happier times.
Yes.
For both the United Kingdom and the
United
States.
From Kansas, the Belgium of the United States.
Yes, there we are.
We're back.
Other notable Americans taking part in the winner's circle. The backing dancer, the primary backing dancer for Loreen in 2012, a guy named Osmond Jordan, who I think was from Florida, but definitely an American. Cool guy. So we like to claim 2012 as not just a Swedish win, but a win for America as well.
Some of us would like to think that Florida is not America, but it might be the most America. So, definitely.
Yeah. Florida. Special place. Special place.
Another question. Since we have run the gamut of results in Eurovision's past, how would modern America do sending someone in earnest to compete in earnest?
Honest opinion, horribly.
I think we are right column. We are bottom half.
For a couple reasons. One, I think it's extremely likely we pick a song that just doesn't fit because America just doesn't get it.
Right.
The other thing is, to do well, other countries have to vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like no matter how good of a song they send, we are, I honestly think, and I'm sure that I'll be proven wrong, like next year,
mm-hmm.
Australia is never going to win because there are just too many traditional voters or whatever who just aren't going to vote for them because it's not Europe.
It's Eurovision.
But they've come in second.
It's a feeling. And if there's a little bit of that sentiment towards Australia, the United States,
mm-hmm.
oh boy.
Oh, I don't disagree with you that, you know, if we showed up, I mean, there are still people who watch going, what the hell are Australia doing? And they've been doing solidly well since 2015. I think America, we don't have the fandom, we don't have the backing knowledge of what's going on there to pull it off. I think people kind of still roll their eyes when we show up as interval acts. Again, we'll talk about interval acts some other time, but the eye rolling can be copious. I think at this point, our best bet is to just work on the potential we just got this news earlier this year, the potential of the American Song Contest that is currently in development. And we just...
It's just not like that's not just like a name that like we are hopeful at. They have told us that it is kind of like a little bitty workshoppy Eurovision.
Yeah. And a lot of the folks who've worked very hard behind the scenes at big Eurovision, people like Christer Bjorkman from SVT.
Friend of the show.
If only. Ulla Melzig, who's done a lot of the technical work behind the scenes at Eurovision the last couple of years. People who really know their stuff at Eurovision and at Melodifestivalen in Sweden. are taking the format and shopping it to the United States. So Derek and I actually attended a press conference in Tel Aviv this year where they were announcing, okay, the format has been shopped, it's been sold, it's being workshopped and going to be developed for a potential American song contest that will probably be premiering in 2021, maybe, possibly, kind of, sort of. But there's a lot of murkiness going on. We don't know which channel it's working with. And again, the United States has a number of EBU affiliate broadcasters. We don't know the format. We don't know if it's state by state, region by region. There's a lot that's needing to be determined and kind of defined.
WGN, one of our EBU. Who was it? TBS? Who was the weird one?
Oh, it was a station out of Boston, I think. A public radio station out of Boston.
That's right.
Anything could happen with that. That could be absolutely huge, or it could just kind of go...
Yeah.
So stay tuned. Hopefully we'll maybe do something well enough that maybe the winner of an American Song Contest might show up as an interval act.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very optimistic.
Yeah.
There's so many things that don't work on broadcast TV anymore that they get resurrected by streaming services.
Mm.
And I think that streaming services, there have been shows that have begun to release in a weekly manner on these streaming services.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that might be a great thing to do, is more people could watch it that way.
Yeah.
And there could be more accurate voting. I don't know.
I have to disagree. I'm not confident about this at all.
I didn't say I was confident.
Know.
I'm hopeful. I'm not necessarily confident. I'll
yeah.
believe it when I say it.
I would say I'm hopeful as well. I would hope that the, with the people involved, there will be a vested interest in having this be similar to Eurovision, that the people who want to make this happen are going to want to do it in a Eurovision-esque way. And I hope they do. And that instead of like pitching it to NBC, who just turns it into another thing like The Voice, only which state will it be instead of which singer will it be, that sort of thing, that they will get a hold of a network who gets it and will just sort of get out of the way and let them run this thing in a cool way. And if it works, then, yeah, maybe we show up as an interval act and people tune in to see the American.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we're in. We didn't even need memes. We're just in.
I mean, memes will help.
Memes will help.
Memes will help. Memes always help. But, I mean, I think that the fact that this is being developed by people who have such a strong basis in Eurovision and in a national final that is considered so integral to the Eurovision experience, that this won't just be a... kind of situation. I think they will treat it with the respect and the history and the love that it deserves.
Mm-hmm.
I hope. Krister, Ula, get on it, guys.
Yeah, we can help. We have Tunnix tea cakes for you to eat.
Sample?
Yeah.
Yes.
If we don't finish them all first.
Yeah.
So this has been an interesting discussion, guys. There's so many.
I like
we're talking about what we know best, America.
Woo.
By Americans. But not just for Americans.
For the world.
For the America. For the world. They've already had us. They don't want us.
They don't want us. But we want
probably
them.
Not.
I want to use
it. Think about it. I sang for a while.
You guys think
I'll
about
go.
It? Yeah. We're begging you, Europe. We want to come back.
Please take us back.
It's cold and nobody likes us. Now that we're all depressed, I just want you to know that you can follow us on social media.
Follow us, Sad Sax.
If you really want to.
We're so lonely.
At 12 Points USA on Twitter or facebook.com/12pointsfromamerica, I guess. You can also email us at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Or if you really, really want to, you can just go to 12pointsfromamerica.com and read about our episodes. And I don't know, there might be bios of us. I haven't checked in a while.
Eventually. And if you're absolute maniacs, why don't you go on Spotify and check out our 12 Points from America channel on there, too.
Just do it.
Just whatever. Just,
come on.
Just do it. Just, okay?
Come on.
America,
stop
listening now.